This is the Pitchfork Review. I'm Pooja Patel, the editor of Pitchfork, and I'm here with our contributing editor, Jen Pelly.
Thanks for having me.
I just watched Jen light incense as we were setting up for this call. Jen, how did you set up for our conversation today?
Yes, I've got my frankincense. I have a couple of candles lit. I just wanted to set the right tone for this conversation.
I feel like you have a proposition for the listeners of the Pitchfork Review today.
Yes.
A strong proposition, which is that we should consider Enya seriously.
So you might be a fan of Enya and just not know it yet because of the way her influence is currently seeping out through independent music culture.
I feel like she's like a fairy tale creature.
I could see that for
sure. You know, she's like a mythological being.
I understand why someone would see her as being this like mythological woman who lives in a castle in Ireland. And I also see why someone would be like, she is a groundbreaking musician who innovated all of these really cool production techniques in the 80s, who has been an inspiration to several generations of artists, just like multifaceted. I guess that's what I really am out to convince people of, or to make people understand, is that Enya is a multifaceted artist, and there's probably more to her than you think.
But yeah, to give context to all of this, basically, we were in a features meeting a couple of weeks ago, and Jen was like, hey, let me just say, I think that there's something to be said about Enya. And we were like, go on. And she was like, well, Enya is everywhere. Like, if you're really listening, you can hear Enya everywhere. And then, kind of coincidentally, around the same time, one of her biggest samples, one of her most popularly subconsciously known samples, appeared on the radio in this hip-hop song called In My Bed by Rotimi and Wale. How you keep it sweet like that, not a very peace
like that, fresh enough for breeze like that. I'll be on my knees for that. So in that song, they sampled this Enya song called Boadicea, which has been sampled many times. It was sampled by the Fugees in the 90s on Ready or Not. Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. It has been sampled by P. Diddy. It's time you invest in me, because if not, then it's best
you leave. Holla. I just think it's cool that that sample in particular, which is kind of this like brooding, dark, not necessarily the first kind of feeling or like vibe you associate with Enya if you're a casual listener.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then that is, has somehow made it through like decades of hip hop radio.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting it's a really kind of sinister, like slow moving, like brooding song. And it's also just Enya playing like synths and humming, like it's just humming.
So what we know is that you're not the only person that thinks that Enya is cool, though you are among the enlightened, it appears.
Yeah, I remember Wiseblood talking like quite a bit about Enya in relation to her album from last year, Titanic Rising. I found an interview from around the time Nicki Minaj and released the Pink Print. Actually, there were several interviews that Nicki Minaj gave around the time she released the Pink Print, where she talked about being a big fan of Enya. And I think the way she phrased it is particularly telling too. She said something like, "People always think I'm joking, but I love Enya."
Do you have a form of music you listen to? Like, you have an artist you listen to that might surprise people?
I do, and every time I tell people this, they think I'm kidding, but I love Enya. I listen to her the most out of everyone. Yeah. So, like,
that is about as far away from rap as I can imagine a popular art form being.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you know what?
Another interesting artist who mentioned Enya recently is Brandy. She has been a huge Enya fan for like since she was 15. And she's talked about Enya a lot over the years. Angel Olsen did an interview with Zane Lowe last fall where they listened to a clip of Orinoco Flow together. And she said something like, I told my manager this is going to be my next move, and like I don't know. She could have been joking, but either way, it intrigued me.
There's just like gigantic Enya energy in the air for sure.
Yeah, and you know, like I said,
and from so many people.
Totally. Maybe it's always been there. I'm not sure, but it's something I've noticed. At least from my perspective, it seems like there's been an uptick in recent years.
But it does. I mean, even personally speaking, it has historically felt like Enya is kind of a jokey subject, even among music fans. And then definitely in popular culture, there was that South Park scene where Stan is tortured by his grandfather playing a parody of Orinoco Flow.
Let me out, Grandma! I can't take it anymore! This music is terrible! It's cheesy but lame and eerily soothing at the same time!
And then Only Time has become a meme with like hundreds of thousands of TikToks and Vines and other kind of placement on the internet.
Who can say where the road
Why do you think that is? Like, what is the background here?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky alchemy to pin, just like Enya's music itself. But I think a lot of it is probably rooted in her association with the New Age genre over mm-hmm. the years, and New Age being this kind of like malign genre music for burning incense to.
What is the aesthetic? What is the visual aesthetic that you think of when you think of New Age music?
Yeah, I probably think of like running water and fluttering birds and crystals, Himalayan salt rocks.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely been a resurgence of interest in New Age over the past decade, especially. New Age has been redeemed in many ways.
Could you tell me kind of like what the musical aesthetic is of New Age that required redemption?
Well, I think it's this idea of it being background music that doesn't have a ton going on in it.
Mm-hmm. The Pure Moods compilation,
mm-hmm.
the like faded, dusty television commercials.
It's interesting because I really wasn't thinking about any of this when I decided that I wanted to dive into Enya's music. But I do have memories of the Pure Moods commercial from when I was a child. I was in elementary school in the 90s.
Experience Pure Moods, the perfect soundtrack for your way of life.
And I don't even think I was aware that what that commercial was selling was music. I just thought of it as a product. And I think that's you know, that's the stigma.
Well, it's selling ambiance.
Yeah. But something that became increasingly clear to me is that Enya's really not a New Age artist.
Mm-hmm.
Enya has herself rejected New Age as a marketing term over the years. And I think when you listen to her music, you could sense that her music is so song oriented. There's like catchy choruses. It's mm-hmm. very influenced by pop music. Whereas when I think of New Age, I think of these kind of like soundscapes that you enter into. Like I think of Brian Eno conceptualizing his ambient music series as something that would be almost in collaboration right. with the background of wherever he was. Brian Eno being an interesting comparison, I think, because he's an artist who made ambient music, and as you know, music fans have no issue seeing him as this multidimensional, multifaceted artist. And I think music culture at large has clearly kind of had a much harder time seeing Enya as like a multifaceted artist.
Just for those who have a hard time understanding what makes Enya unique, could you explain what her music sounds like?
Yeah, so maybe let me explain like what Enya actually is. So
I love that.
So Enya is actually a trio. It's Enya and her producer Nikki Ryan and his wife Roma Ryan. Enya composes the melodies and performs all of the vocals and most of the instruments. Roma writes the lyrics inspired by Enya's emotions, and Nicki is the producer and the arranger. And when they started collaborating in the 80s, Nicki had this idea. He was very inspired by Phil Spector and Brian Wilson and had this idea to recreate the wall of sound. Like, his version of that was like a choir of one. So just layering vocals, layering hundreds of harmonies to create this like cathedral of sound, just one person. That's the foundation of Enya sound. Synthesizers, electric keyboards. Enya's voice layered, lots of reverb. My life goes on.
So it's quite complex. Like, it's not this thing that just kind of like flows out of her and washes over you and then it's done. It's like very clearly a complicated composition process.
Absolutely, yeah. And very like labored over in the studio for years and years. One of her songs, they layered 500 of her vocals.
I want to know what Enya's real life was like, because to me, she was birthed from the ocean and has been floating above land ever since.
Totally. Yeah. I loved kind of digging into and learning about her backstory. She grew up in a rural part of the north of Ireland called Gweedore. She grew up speaking Gaelic. She was one of nine children in a super musical family. And in 1970, her siblings started this band called Clannad. Nicki Ryan became their manager. And so Clannad had a falling out with him. And Enya decided to leave her family behind and go with Nicki.
Wow.
And I think for a 20-year-old, it's like a pretty incredible, bold decision to make to like leave your family members behind. And so she moves in with the Ryans in like 1982, and they ended up creating their own studio. They turned like this shed in the backyard into a studio.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, like, the Ryans like cashed in their life savings to build the studio. Enya like sold the saxophone she had to help fund the studio. But it was really a smart decision, because they had all, when you have your own studio, you really can experiment and take your time and like figure out exactly what it is you wanted to do. So from 1982 to like 1986, Enya spent 4 years just like experimenting with her sound and figuring out what she wanted her music to be.
What was the big break?
So after she made this television soundtrack called The Celts for this BBC television series, someone who worked at Warner Brothers in the UK had heard that album, the soundtrack, and was like a big fan of it. That was what led to Watermark happening in 1988, her first real solo album, because the one that was her debut was really a soundtrack that like became her first solo album. But at that point, she knew what she had to protect when she was like signing a record contract. There was like a clause in her contract that said, "And you will have 3 years to work on each album," which I think probably saying I need three years in between albums might be harder for someone to negotiate in 2020, when people are, I think, wrongly expected to produce music faster than that.
Yeah, Jen, something that I have found pretty interesting about her as a figure in music too is that she's made a really big distinction between quote-unquote success and quote-unquote fame and what the difference is there. In your perception of that, what does success look like for an artist who avoids fame?
She's talked a lot about how when Watermark blew up, like, no one knew what she looked like. People didn't know if Enya was one person. They didn't know if Enya was a band. They didn't know if it was a woman or a man, or like, there was just a lot of questions because she was basically an unknown artist. And she really liked the idea of the music being what reached people, but she was really, really disinterested in the idea of her personality, like, guiding that or being at the forefront of that or even the face of it.
Right.
She talked about her Warner Brothers trying to make her image more rock and roll, which is really funny to think about.
I'm kind of obsessed with how much time you've spent recently with Enya and reading about Enya, but you weren't always a fan. Like, you haven't always been a conscious Enya observer.
Definitely not. I admit that I had never really spent much time with Enya's music until last year. It was always something that was kind of in the back of my mind, give Enya a serious listen. And it's interesting, like, I feel like subconsciously I knew that there was this kind of like uncoolness factor attached to Enya, but I didn't really know why. And my other main association with Enya was that one of my best friends who I did college radio with like 10 years ago.
Shout out college radio.
Shout out college radio. Shout out Jonathan Williger. He writes for Pitchfork now too, actually. And he's always been a big Enya fan. So my main associations were like this vague uncoolness that I knew was attached to her. And then one of my friends who's like a deep experimental music head had been kind of going to bat for Enya since we were like 20. And last summer, I went upstate to interview this artist, Emily Sprague, who is an ambient composer, and she also is a singer-songwriter in this band Florist, and I was doing a rising profile on her, and at some point...
She's great.
I love Florist. At some point during the conversation, she mentions that the Enya song, Even in the Shadows, is her favorite song of all time. I think Even in the Shadows is a great case for Enya's dream pop, because I was really surprised when I heard that song. What surprised me the most is that I knew artists like Grimes over the years had mentioned being inspired by Enya, and I was shocked by how true that seemed. Like, it really reminded me of these artists who I'm a big fan of, who have cited her as an influence. And something that I came to notice during my year of Enya mania is that her influence is very traceable. The artists who cite her as an influence are not just naming her for fun or because it's like a cool, unexpected signifier.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in this conversation, it's become very clear that Enya's music is super influential to a lot of artists that we love. And we're gonna dig deeper into that after a quick break.
Hey friends, I'm Alamine Abdul Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm journalist Sam Sanders.
I'm poet Saeed Jones.
And I'm producer Zach Stafford. And we are the hosts of a podcast called Vibe Check.
On Vibe Check, we talk about everything. News, culture, and entertainment, and how it all feels.
That's right. We talk about any and everything on our show, from real life issues like grief to music and movie critiques. And that barely scratches the surface.
Yes, indeed. And it doesn't stop there. We have got a lot to say. So join our group chat, come to life. Follow and listen to Vibe Check wherever you get your podcasts.
How do you get into Enya? Where do you start?
So there's a song from Enya's first album called I Want Tomorrow, which really blew my mind. It just has this really like kind of like windswept like elegance to it. It doesn't move in the way songs usually move. It's really like kind of like free flowing and meandering and but still catchy, which is how I feel about a lot of her songs. Mm-hmm. They don't really move the way you expect a pop song to move. Now you're here. There's a song called Ebuday, which is just these really like kind of like dark beats and Gaelic lyrics. There was a song called Anything Is from her album The Memory of Trees, which is like from the late 90s. And there's just this really cool like vocal in the chorus of that song that feels like it's like climbing.
Let's talk about these huge artists in the indie world who have been openly and very recently saying, you know, Enya is an inspiration to me and an influence, and it's transitioned into their music. I was wondering if you could maybe run through a couple of songs that the casual listener might not make that connection with.
Totally. I think Wiseblood is probably the biggest Enya head, like, yeah, in modern music. She
and it makes total sense.
It does, yeah. She talked about when she was recording her album, Front Row Seat to Earth. It's this kind of like atmospheric, like lots of layered vocals and reverb. And she told me that when she was recording that song, the producer of the album was like, kind of sounds like Enya. And she was like, oh, wow, you don't get it.
Like the producer was being dismissive of how it, yeah, sounded like Enya. And she was like, this is what I aspired for. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she talked about the song Movies from her album Titanic Rising also being inspired by Enya. In particular, it's very kind of like meandering and kind of stretched out, and it sounds very Enya-esque.
The last artist that I wanted us to talk about was Twigs, whose album, most recent album, I mean, so incredible. You mentioned that there were a bunch of Enya influences on there too that are kind of, you know, palpable.
Yeah, so in the cover story that we ran last year, Twigs talked about the opening track, Thousand Eyes, being inspired by Enya. If I walk out the door, it starts our
last goodbye. And One O'Trix produced on it.
Yeah, when I interviewed Dan LoPatin, aka 106.never, he talked about having conversations with Twigs about Enya in the studio, and he said that he felt like he could hear like things from their Enya conversations in the song they collaborated on, which is Daybed. Careful on my footsteps, possessive is my daybed. In terms of why Enya's music is resonating so specifically right now, mm-hmm, I think at least part of it is because of music just becoming a less patriarchal place than it was in the late 80s, early 90s. I think music listeners in general are more open-minded now than they were, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
I think a generation of artists have grown up listening to her music and have kind of now arrived at like the center of independent music and are reclaiming her as a role model.
And these are all ideas that I dig into in the piece that I wrote.
The more that we talk about this, it's funny that we keep using Enya as both kind of a like a state of being and an adjective and a verb. Like, it's just kind of a way, it's like a practice. Like, we just keep saying Enya-esque. Things are Enya-esque, and it could mean one of 1 million things, but evokes a very specific feeling.
Yeah, well, I think she did. She did kind of create her own genre. It's hard to think of an artist who is a clear predecessor to what she did. You know, a lot of artists who I interviewed for this story called her a role model, mm-hmm. not just because of her music, but because of the creative control she managed to hold on to throughout her career, for being like just really uncompromising, for her dedication to her craft. You know, I think we do live in an era where artists are really conflicted about commodifying their personalities on social media,
yeah,
and kind
definitely.
Of having to use their personalities to sell their music more than artists have probably ever been expected to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for the idea that you can share as much as is comfortable for you. I don't think that people should be expected to be these public personalities if they don't want to.
Well, do you think that, considering Enya in 2020, do you think that an artist could pull off her level of kind of complete creative ownership, like reinvention of a genre, without being in the spotlight and without having some sort of like constant presence?
I think it would be, you know, I don't think there can be another Enya. I think that there's really something to be said for just like looking at the foundation of Enya, though, like thinking like just the fact that from the beginning they were like, we are controlling the sound. I feel like a major label artist saying like, there will be no one else in my studio other than my two friends who I've been working with since I was 18. It's hard to say whether, like, how hard you would have to fight for that in 2020, but it's,
yeah.
It's definitely inspiring.
Definitely. God damn it. Change the record industry.
Yeah.
Pay artists to be creative without label control. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you. I hope that at the very least, folks check out some Enya songs and just give them a chance.
You could say that if you're not an Enya fan yet,
only time.
In only time.
who knows where the road
I'm
will
sorry,
lead.
I had to. I really had to. If you want to hear the songs we talked about on this episode, check out our new Spotify playlist. It's called The Pitchfork Review, Music from the Podcast. The Pitchfork Review is hosted by me, Pooja Patel. Special thanks to Jen Pelly for coming on the episode. You can follow her on Twitter, @JenPelly, and you can follow me, @Sonari. You can follow Pitchfork on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, @Pitchfork. This episode was produced by our senior producer, Caitlin Pierce, and our assistant producer, Ben Montoya. It was edited by Todd Whitney and Andy Cush. Our executive producer is Alex Kappelman. Our original music is by Andrew Eben of Basement Crafts. This episode was mixed and scored by Ben Montoya. Special thanks to Amy Phillips and Julie Shen. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave us a review and subscribe to the podcast. You can also send an email to podcast@pitchfork.com with any feedback. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Hey friends, I'm Alamine Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.